Public Works Committee meeting of Tuesday, October 18th to order. We have present Alderman Kuzki, Alderman Cott, and Alderman Cook, and myself, as well as staff. Do we have any citizens' comments? Okay, hearing none. We will move on to minutes for correction or approval from September 20th. Any comments on the minutes? Then we will take them as presented. Moving on, new business, Public Works 2016-68, backflow report tracking services agreement with BSI.
Staff is recommending that the city enter into a subscription agreement with BSI, which is Backflow Systems, Inc., to do all of our notification and data management of our backflow prevention program. This is in accordance with an existing city-adopted ordinance regarding cross-connection controls. These cross-connection controls are put in place to prevent contaminants from non-drinking water sources to our drinking supply. These types of connections can originate from any place, such as manufacturing uses to residential uses and with the use of sprinkler systems and swimming pools. Since the adoption of the cross-connection control ordinance in 2008, the city has been maintaining manually the list of annual reports that come in. Each device is supposed to annually test to make sure they're in compliance, there's no issues, and then submit those tests to the city. We are supposed to track them, and if we haven't gotten one from a resident that we know has an active RPV, we're supposed to contact them and have them submit a test results for us. Right now, again, it's done manually by one staff member. Last count, we had over 1,100 addresses that report. Now, that's just reporting. That's not the total number of RPVs that are out there, and it's not the total number of devices, because each device has to be tested. We just track by address. Actually, one of our backflow reporting vendors was the one who recommended BSI to us as a convenience not only for the city but for them as well in supplying their reports, because right now they send them either through fax, through the mail, sometimes they email them to us. The benefits of having a third party do this is that the entire process, as I mentioned, is automated. It's online. The actual report is submitted on an online portal. It's backed up. It's maintained. It can be tracked and searched rather than a spreadsheet more easily. BSI rates for the program for the city is an annual subscription fee of $495. And then every time one of the vendors uploads the test results, it's a base price of $12.95 per device. Although the cost of the program is within our spending authority, we felt two things needed to occur. One would be an amendment to the cross-connection ordinance that lets individuals know that there's a requirement to upload their test online and that there's a possible fee associated with it.
There is?
As well as BSI offers the ability to provide a fee on top of their $12.95 base fee. Most communities that use BSI, and they have over 100, I think, municipalities that they work with, a lot of them local, either use the base price of $12.95 or they add an additional, it ranges from $1 to $2 to $10 onto that fee. And what BSI does on a monthly basis, they will deduct whatever, like processing costs, if it's done by credit card, from that amount and send it to the city. We are seeking input from the Public Works Committee on if we should do the additional charge, as well as review of the language that we added to the draft ordinance, identifying that this electronic submission is required. But if we do go beyond that $12.95 base cost, or if we don't have a cost, we recommend that the rebated monies be dispersed to the water fund. BSI is here. They have two representatives here. They're here to answer any questions specific about the service that they provide. But if you have any questions for staff on the additional language that we're adding to the cross-connection control ordinance, please feel free.
This is a year-to-year thing, then?
Yes. The subscription is an annual subscription. At any time, we can opt out after that year.
So
When it comes to residential, so I understand commercial and industrial type uses. So where are you going to get the money for the residential ones?
They have.
Is that going to be a fee in the water bill?
No. It's a fee to the vendor who uploads the report. They charge the resident to test their.
How do they charge the resident?
For the service for them to test.
No, how? How do they go about collecting?
Yeah, it's private.
This is the first I've ever heard of this.
Right, this is a private contract between the inspection service and the resident or the business owner. City's not involved other than requiring a piece of paper saying that it's been
tested and submitted.
So it's you can go and hire XYZ to do the test for you. They will charge you, give you an invoice, you pay it directly to them. That vendor is responsible for paying whatever fees that are related, which in this case would be a $12.95 service fee, which we are obligating.
And that's $12.95 a year?
No, per device. And they
per
do
device
per
annually. Annually. Because, yeah,
and then every year you
every
pay.
Every year you have to certify that it's been tested, so it's an annual fee.
Unless you discontinue that connection and you close off.
And where's all the check and balances on that stuff?
Right now,
where do you... First of all, you're telling me everybody that has a swimming pool in town has this?
It has an RPZ, yes.
Everybody?
Yes.
Everybody has this.
Goes back
pool,
to...
Sprinklers.
Huh?
That has
in a
sprinkler
above ground
system.
Or an in-ground? Or it doesn't matter.
Anyone that's connected to any water supply.
And we got everybody...
No, we don't, and that's the point of this.
That's the problem.
Right now, that what we're tracking, we receive a little over 1,100 annual reports. So each one annual date is different. So we receive them daily coming in.
But separate with residential versus other. That's what I'm interested in.
No, the same company can submit
50. Yeah,
it could be half commercial, half residential.
And we separate them by address.
They're just done
and we
by
just
address.
Track by address. And by ordinance, if we haven't received one in a year, an update, we're supposed to send a letter.
Do we do that now?
No, we don't.
So now you're all saying to start doing it? That's what you're saying?
This is what BSI do.
So how do you control people putting a pool in and they're going to do this?
Well, because they get a permit. And so that's how we know that there's an RPZ needed.
The issue of cross-contamination is potentially serious for the water supply. Mm-hmm. And the potential for cross-contamination is the same risk for a residential property versus industrial property. So that's why we're not differentiating, and the requirement to test, is it mandated by the state plumbing code too, or is it just our local codes?
No, it's
okay. Yeah, so whether we have the local ordinance and the fee or not, they still should be submitting materials to the state, and it's still required by the state. So this is something that we adopted in 2008 that, you know, we've been doing through local enforcement and tracking, and this provides us a better way to do so.
Okay, can you just explain something to me? Cause, okay, so I had a pool years ago, so mm-hmm. probably was prior mm-hmm. to this. So if I want to put a pool in, a person wants to put a pool in, mm-hmm. you get your permit. How does this, like, where does this go? Or
sure.
Can you explain the...
I would like to see a device, actually.
Yeah, that's like, how's the device, where does the device go?
In front of your, that's like your line comes into your house.
Yeah.
Your RPZ goes right here, and your water meter's here, and then it goes to the rest of your house. So if something happens, it can go all the way back to your meter, but it can't get back out to our system.
The issue being,
it's a one-way valve.
If you think about your pool, pool's a very easy one. You have a body of water sitting. It can easily become contaminated.
No, I get
so
that.
You have a line of water that's connected to the pool that keeps it filled.
But I never had a line of water connected to the pool. That's why I guess I'm confused on this.
If it's not connected to the water supply, then you don't have to have
right.
it.
Okay.
Right.
See, that's what I'm getting
exactly,
confused.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to picture my when I had a pool, like,
so
where
was...
Sprinkler
system.
You use the
sprinkler system.
You use the hose.
You use the hose if
right.
you had to fill it.
But now most of them have an autofill. They're constantly connected. If the water level dips, it automatically sends water in. That's what the... It's basically a stop gate. It doesn't let water go back into the system.
Right. Not my fault.
Yeah.
So that's what the system is.
That's what I'm trying to picture, like, I'm picturing how I had my pool, like, how did that... Yeah, I understand the contamination and all that, but I don't understand how does it get hooked to the house then? Yeah.
And you wouldn't have needed it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's those type of uses. If you have a pool that has the autofill or a sprinkler system,
okay.
And then in commercial uses, obviously, you need that. But you don't want water coming back into it that's outside of a closed system, which all your
I get that. I just couldn't picture how this was working. Okay.
I guess I understand the reason you have it. It's sort of like a same thing on your sump pump. So when you pump your sump pump out, it can't come back and fill the pit back
check
up.
Valve.
Check valve.
Yeah, it's
a valve.
It's similar to that.
Water goes one way, it can't come back.
But this is more a yearly issue, though. And it's more an inspection and all of this other stuff. And that's...
And that you're getting on a point that the state mandates this. The state requires the individual to submit to the state the testing.
To us.
Well, but we... They submit it to us, and we submit it to the state?
To us. We are the record keeper.
We are the record keeper. But it's mandated by state, then, that we hold the records.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to be turned over to the state, or they
only,
can request them at any time?
For inspection, yep.
If they request. And they've never acknowledged on it.
No.
That's good. Do we know about how much time we spend? I know you said 1,100 addresses. Mm-hmm. Do we get an idea?
I don't know the exact amount of time, but I do know the process. So they come in through fax, we scan them, we put them in a building permit file, and we enter them into a database that gets done usually weekly. We don't do them every day, so every time they come in, it happens weekly.
Mm-hmm.
So at least an hour, hour and a half of staff time is devoted to this.
Each.
But we don't know the timing of when they come in.
Right, it's a random thing. So that could, just based on address, that's 1,100. Hours, give or take, but we don't know.
Right.
Certain businesses could have multiples, or residents could have two.
Right.
I assume addresses are broken down for townhomes, each individual.
Yes.
Fire suppression has a backflow preventer, so anything that's a multi-unit building that's new will have them as well. So a six-unit building is going to be having six of them. I assume that goes through the property manager, owner, not the...
Depends if it's condo or apartment.
Condo or, yeah, so that's going to be broken down. Bart, you had talked to me the other day about what the total fee we were kind of estimating would be if, if we were to say the city pays the fee instead of residents, what would that?
I guess it'd be about $20,000. You know, if we've got 1,100 devices that we know of that exist, you know, even if we double that at $12 per that the company's going to charge us, that's over $20,000. But you know, hopefully, it would be a little bit less. You know, I guess that's how I want everybody to think about this as like a two-part question. One is that you've got the automation and like staff efficiency of taking this off of an in-house person because it is data entry work. It's relatively, you know, busy work, and it's not being done that efficiently and assigning it to this company for a fee, okay? And then whether we want to pass that cost on to everybody else. So I'm perfectly comfortable if everybody says, this is ridiculous. We shouldn't be charging everybody to do this because it's enough of a hassle as it is. Fine, let's eat the cost in our budget at $20,000 or $25,000 and go from there. But then you're getting into the conversation of, you know, should the people who, commercial entities, manufacturing entities that have sprinklers and people who can afford irrigation systems and sprinklers in their houses, you know, should they be basically, you know, getting a service that everybody else in the town is paying for? So there's the contract, and then there's the fee that gets charged to the residents.
Well, and now you have 1,100. Is it going to go up from there?
Yeah,
most
likely.
So that's going to affect the budget every year. You're going to have to adjust for how many.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like with every iteration of the building code, sprinklers seem to get more widely adopted, and whether that happens here eventually with single family is for years down the road. But you know, it is more likely to vastly increase than not.
And being that there's such a small number of residential that's in the in this, if you start going back and you start looking through other residents, yeah, it's going to become a bigger number, too. Because that's my problem is, too, I see an inequality among the residential homes that, yeah, this person has to pay it and do this, and this person's doing the same thing, and he's not.
However, when you apply for the permit for a sprinkler system or a pool that has that, you know that there are conditions with reporting.
Then you almost grandfather at that point, and as you go forward, and you, everybody else is grandfathered then.
It's a possibility. I'm just trying to get my arms around the cost of if we have a person that's spending 1,100 hours, that's around $40,000 a year. if you figure a $25 an hour person with benefits on that, you know, $35 an hour, that's $38,000 a year.
Yeah.
So that's, if we're in-house, we would be saving some money because we're freeing up that person's time. So 1,100 hours, and I'm just using that number, we don't know exactly what it is, but that's one
probably
per.
Less, yeah.
But you figure if we're at $35,000 of time being spent, that's quite a bit. Now, do I like the idea of adding a fee onto a permit that somebody's already been granted? I don't really care for that. I do like the idea of grandfathering them in. It's kind of hard for me to accept the fact that they already have this in place, and for convenience for the city, we're going to charge you.
Exactly.
Granted, it does free up a lot of services in-house, but we're basically pushing the burden from the general operating fund to the individual. So that individual is the one causing the issue of us having to staff somebody to do the work. So we're basically putting the onus on that individual or business owner that has the device as compared to all residents paying it out of the general fund. That's kind of where I'm at right now. The general fund is paying for it, so basically everyone that doesn't have a device is paying for this service to be monitored. If we put it on a user fee or user system, those people are responsible for the fee completely.
And keep in mind the annual cost to run the test when they hire a certified vendor, which they have to, it's about $100 mm-hmm. annually. Mm-hmm. And what the vendors do is build in the $12.95 into that cost. They don't see a separate fee. They're paying for this annual testing annually anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So in reality, from the city side, I don't like the idea of adding a fee onto the $12.95. You know, if the base fee is that, I don't like the idea of the city making a revenue off of this line item. Because the intent, from how I see it, is to free up internal staff time without creating a burden to the rest of the tax base. You know, if you're paying a fee for a specific use, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. That's why we have permits. But I don't like the idea of adding a fee onto it. I'd be comfortable with the city absorbing the $495 and not trying to recoup that or increase the fee to create revenue.
So in that discussion, the ordinance then would be modified basically to $12.95 or whatever the, you know, the price ends up being. So a direct pass or...
So you have 1,100 users of this. Why should we take it out of everybody's kitty that they're putting in a taxes for 1,100. If they're not even going to know they're technically getting this fee, why should the city? I understand the $495, right. But the $12.95 a user, I don't see where we should absorb that.
His proposal wasn't.
No,
it was that
the
we would
individual since they are the individual causing the need for us
they
to
would
do
pay
that. That's why we should.
Okay, that's what
instead of right now. Right now, we as the general.
Gotcha.
Pay for it. And I don't... This cleans it up. It makes the permitting onus on those who have that device.
So how does, like, a lawn sprinkler system compare to a irrigation system? Like, I have one of those tractors. You hook with the hose, and it goes through and waters my yard.
That's just using a hose as...
Technically, though, it's similar...
No, because your hose will either have a drain back on your house, not a direct connection to your irrigation system. You usually have a drain back hose bib that goes on your house like a frostproof run that prevents it from going back.
If you have an irrigation system,
it's a direct pipe. There's
when you come into your house, there's going to be
permanent.
A system of valves.
Versus mine's not permanent.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah, that hose you can disconnect and it will drain that.
And you
what is 18 inches,
yeah.
And you can just turn that off. You can't do that with irrigation. That's why you have to blow it out at the end of the year. So, because it's permanently connected. There was one thing that I had seen in the agreement. I had downloaded it Thursday, and then I downloaded it just now. There was a term in here, and a percentage. And I had to download it again, but it was in the... I thought it was in the inducement section, number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... changed? The language changed since I last, or am I missing it?
Do you think it was in the ordinance?
Maybe it was in the ordinance. Let me flip back to that.
The draft ordinance. Yes, it was in the draft ordinance.
Is that?
G, the final sentence, it says, after May 1, 2018, the filing fee shall be calculated based upon the actual cost. That was put in there by the city attorney because that was common language they had in a different community.
So we would scrap that if everybody's proposing.
Okay, that's where it was. I knew I'd seen that at the very bottom. I thought it was on the... pulls apart, but okay, that was good. Any other questions or comments on this one? Or do we wish to revise this? Do we want to look at it again, or do we want to move it forward with our comments?
I like your idea of eating the $4.95.
Yeah, you too.
That I'm okay with. The $12.95, now, if I've got a sprinkler system set up and I just get all upset about $12.95, I can just disconnect it and not have to pay. Is that correct?
Well, I don't see that happening. Disconnected.
Yeah. And who's going to verify that?
We do.
Oh, you'll have to come out anyhow for that then.
I mean, the $12.95 really isn't a lot of money for, you know, if you can afford that kind of a system, you probably aren't going to complain much. I wouldn't think. I don't know. But it is an expense, and it has to be checked, so I don't see why everybody should have to pay for something that only some people have.
Right. I would agree with that. My recommendation would be to have staff make the revisions that we've discussed, and then take this to council. Not on consent. That would be my recommendation.
We should be able to get that done for next week, if that's okay with everybody.
EDP project change order number one.
So as you know, the city has entered into a contract with Geneva Construction for intersection improvements at the Ripley plant, Route 47. The bid came in quite a bit lower than the EDP budget, and therefore the city requested that in lieu of installing standard traffic signals, they would do combination lighting. The change order for $21,387.50 reflects the increase to install the combination lighting.
Explain for me combination lighting in this situation. How's that going to work?
So it's the traffic signal as well as the street light.
On top of the mast arm pole.
Which is very...
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yes,
gotcha.
Which is what you have throughout the city.
Gotcha. Okay.
And also, to be noted, IDOT has already approved this change.
This is for the engineering agreement portion. We have already authorized the changes with IDOT. That was done prior. So this is on the engineering side, if I'm correct.
No, this is
construction.
I'm sorry, this is a construction. This is Geneva Construction.
Yep.
Because we've already done the...
Yeah, we already approved one side of it. Yeah.
So, but with this one, all in all, we are still under budget or zero. And we are paying nothing on this. So the change order is, I don't want to say irrelevant, but it is a positive because we are getting more...
We are, and IDOT approved it because we maintain all roadway lighting.
Yeah. So this is a good thing for us. I have no issues with it, unless anybody else does. I would recommend we place this on the consent for the 25th. All right. Continuing on. 2016-70 disposal and purchase of vehicles.
Well, if we're going to get rid of some, let's buy some new ones. Now, as you can see in the memo, the trucks we're getting rid of are really quite worn out, and the three trucks are actually budgeted in this year's budget. The only thing that is not budgeted would be the salt spreaders, and that would be to the tune of $11,114 that we would have to find the money for somewhere.
I can cover that from somewhere.
And I believe that that would really improve our snow fighting fleet with the two one-tons having that, since we have 8 big trucks and 9 routes. These two one-tons would actually do the work of a large dump truck then in our snow fighting efforts.
Those be ready for this season?
These trucks are on the ground. They're white. They're not red like our other ones, which I think is a really good thing, because the white, talking to all the other municipalities, is much easier to find and it's much easier to sell. They just make so many more white vehicles. And these are on the ground ready to go unless they've been sold in the last 2 weeks.
First question. Going with the white,
mm-hmm.
on that,
mm-hmm.
most of the fleet is red.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a recommendation or policy or standard for vehicles? Do we have any desire to try to keep it in one fleet color?
No formal policy, no staff desire at this time.
Okay. I know we've, on the police department side, we have done some different things, and in other instances, we've moved vehicles around.
And parts kind of switched over to white. It wouldn't be a bad thing to think about switching to white, just for the availability. And even the F-150, even though it is white, it's still a 6 to 8 week order on an F-150, which is surprising.
Okay. So that was my first one. I just want to check on the color in terms of...
And we had white fleet before. We had many white trucks before.
And I know, you know, the police department's made a shift
from
white to black. And,
right.
The only white down there is actually...
the SUV, right?
It's the vinyl striping on it.
Detail.
So,
right.
Okay. So that was the first part I had.
Sure.
So we're looking at 6 weeks. The quad cab, you're recommending the quad cab for... staffing purposes in order to move staff around back and forth. That is the
biggest one, and like rain sensitive gear for locating.
Okay, so it gives them a space to store it, because those two vehicles are going to have that one will not have a plow on it. Okay.
No, that one will not have a plow. And the other reason for the quad cab was the single cab state purchase winner was a Chevrolet. We don't have any Chevys in the fleet. So every filter, everything would be different.
So from a mechanical standpoint, it makes sense to keep it in the Ford?
Keep it in the Ford. And the Ford was really not that much more expensive for the quad cab.
So everything is budgeted except $11,114, which would require it's under staff authority, under $20,000. Budget doesn't look bad right now, so I don't see that being an issue for us to deal with that. Any other questions or comments on this one? Do you recommend the purchase?
I say let's get them.
If we get them as soon as we can, we should have them by the time snow flies. It will take a little bit of time at Henderson to put the boxes on, since we went with stainless steel instead of the mild steel, but that, again, will last us a lot longer.
I do like that idea of going with the stainless steel.
That's what they all will be if we can help it.
Because... just from my experience, just kind of drilling a hole through stainless is a lot harder than the regular steel.
Yeah, we have some regular mild steel bodies that we've already had to have taken to the sandblaster and have them repowder coated because it was eaten through from the salt and rust and the weather.
Okay, and then one more question.
Sure.
We are going to put these out for sealed bids.
No, these are state purchase.
For the disposal.
Disposal sealed bids, and I'm hoping to go with the police department and do like all 9 at once.
Bart, you had mentioned potential for auction. Is that still on the table?
Yeah.
Send them to an auction?
Yeah, we haven't looked at it in full. We haven't talked about it yet, but Metro West has been approached by an auto auctioneer in the region and kind of reviewed their program and endorsed it, so that they're hoping to get a ton of municipal vehicles down there for a day, I think later in November. And so, you know, that could be an option, but if not, the fallback will be sealed bid for 9 vehicles, which is a pretty sizable fleet. So.
Yeah, you get a lot more interest, especially since 2 of them have snow plows.
Yeah, I do like the idea of potentially going out for auction. It gives us a little better window, so whichever one is available to us, let's go with it. I think it's a good thing. So this one, without any objection, we will place this on the consent for 1025. Continuing on, 2016-71 Capital Improvement Projects Update.
Brett has provided a memo that has a brief summary for each project. So I don't think he goes through each one of them, but so if anybody has any questions, happy to entertain them.
As typical, do you have any highlights of the list besides the list?
Yes, Countryside, which is the big project, they will start paving tomorrow, phase two. And Geneva thought it'd take about 2 days to pave that. So Wednesday, Thursday, binder should be down on phase two. So phase one and phase two would be done with binder. Water Main, they are currently working on mainline installation on phase three, which is essentially West Kendall.
East Kendall.
And probably would have all that done by the end of this week.
Yes.
So they're moving fast through phase three, which is good, because they got to get that closed up before.
Mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Good.
Are we ahead of schedule on this?
Right on. Yeah. Eric, anything from you to add to that, or is that pretty much
that's the big one? Oh, Route 47 street lighting, they're stringing wires. Poles should be going up later this week.
Or we have
next week.
We'll have some lane closures. Did that? I saw that was posted.
They've been doing rolling ones, but only on the ones that are very close to the road. They actually brought out a little gator. Mm-hmm. And they've been parking their truck off the side of the road and using the gator to help pull.
Okay, so we should see those.
We're hoping.
Thanksgiving for the streetlights. Okay, I'm going to head off that one. So,
I believe their 35Ds will be pretty close enough by then. And once they get them wired, they should go up pretty smoothly.
And then, let's see.
The Wrigley project,
yeah.
We talked a little bit about that, but
they started
mm-hmm. On Monday. Virgil Cook is out there on Monday. Geneva won't be in until end of October to Mellon resurface. There is a lead time on those poles, so probably won't see poles up until December.
Okay.
And everything else is closing up, wrapping up, and
with Countryside, we also had a lot of extra work that we were able to do with the RTBR this year. That was a lot of extra streets, which was great.
So when we're done for the season working there, what's the condition that the residents are going to deal with?
At Countryside?
Yeah.
Binder.
Okay.
It'll be all the way up to binder. You'll have little bumps where the manholes are, and they'll have about that much of a bump getting out of their driveway.
What problems that can create for snow plowing?
We're going to stay away from the curb, so it won't create any problem.
Okay. Anything else on that one? Nice informational piece. I can see the end of the packet on the agenda. 2016-72 bond letter of credit reduction summary.
There has been really no updates since June 22nd, so nothing for this quarter.
Okay. Any questions, comments? I don't think so. Informational item. Continuing. 2016-73, the 2016 sanitary sewer lining change order number 2.
This change order is the balancing change order, which we normally do at the end of a contract to balance what the bid quantities were with the as-built quantities. The as-built quantities proved to be a little bit more than what we had in the bid, and so it increased the contract value by $757.45.
And the agreed contract price was $189.14, is that correct?
That was, but there was a change order number 1 that reduced it down to $143,476.30.
All in all, still within budget, so looking pretty good with the final closeout. Any questions or comments? Okay. That one there. Consent if no one has any objections. Okay. Additional business. Jackie? Larry?
A couple of things, actually. Just a couple of real quick things. This road coming in by the tennis courts here.
School.
Is there any way we can get that striped? I mean, is that still one way? I mean, I see people go, I'm just waiting for an accident.
It's up to the school. It's a private driveway.
I know, but is there any way we can talk to them about striping it or doing something?
That will be probably in a much bigger overall discussion that includes the back parking lot.
What is it supposed to be?
It's been both ways. It's been one way. It's been out.
Because when you pull out here, the sign says one way.
Yeah, I thought it was one way, but people... I'm guilty of it.
I think it's becoming more and more common as the striping has gone away and the road improvements that it's becoming more of a two-way.
And it may be able to go back to two-way since now they have adequate parking at the high school for all the cars. That's what made it one-way. It was always two-way.
I don't care what it is. I just think it needs to be marked properly. Because even though it's not ours, if there's an accident, we're going to be responding and having to deal with it. And, you know, we don't need any accidents there.
Sure.
I was just wondering if we can have some discussion and find out exactly what they have.
We can surely talk to them to see if they have anything planned for it.
Okay. Second thing, leaf pickup. When are we scheduled for that?
Never.
Never.
No, it is November 7th. Is, I believe, I can't remember which side of town, so I don't want to be quoted on that.
Coming up in November.
Yes, and then the 14th is the next, is the other side of town.
To the north side. Okay.
We have to flip-flop. There's people that actually keep track.
Just a reminder, you always can bag your leaves through the end of November, and Advanced Disposal will take them away for free.
Okay.
Any week. Any week, whatever.
Yeah, because right now mine are all still green.
And there's people already raking them into the street and countryside.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the last thing I have, are you Joe?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Joe had called me, and I mentioned it to you about the water hookup on Walnut. You're chairman, you decide when you want to. Did you want to address the.
I could.
Okay.
I'm Joe Lusk. I reside at 308 Walnut Street. I've owned the property for about 9 years. It was a rental for a while. I rehabbed the house anyhow. I got a situation where I'm moving to Yorkville, but I just recently discovered my wall has a tremendous amount of sulfur and iron. So I wanted to hook up to the city. And I didn't talk to Eric, but through emails, discovered a $3,700 hookup. And I think it was $400 and some.
$490, I think, for the meter.
Right. And I'm in a situation now, I am fully retired, and my full money I live off of is Social Security. I'm not working at all. So I was asking, when I asked the committee if it was possible, some type of reduction of the $3,700 hookup. Because right now I'm facing about $4,000 for HD to come in with the line and come to the house. So,
typically on an issue of this, the city doesn't waive the fees. The issue being that it's a precedent being set. If it's an annexation, if you're a developer coming in, it's part of the process. It would be something that a fee is built into it. Waiving fees, we have quite a few. Well, not quite a few, but we do have wells that are still existing around the city. Mm-hmm. If we do for one, we would be subject to the possibility of opening yourselves up for waiving that for everyone. And, you know, it is a $3,700 plus the meter fee, so it's not a small cost because right. It is a cost to the city for us to maintain the system. That's what it's for. The $490 is a pass-through on the meter fee, but the rest is the actual maintenance and upkeep, basically for having somebody come onto the system. So it's something I know staff has looked at, staff has considered it and discussed it. I appreciate Larry bringing it to us. If it were something that the staff felt strongly that we could make a waiver on it, it would probably be something that would want to go before the full council for discussion, because it would be something that truly would set us up for precedent and would have a significant financial impact to the city. So I understand your position and where you're right. at. I do understand. I appreciate you coming to us. And
I mean, the wall right now is usable, mm-hmm. but you know, we have to bring bottled water in for drinking. But other than that, you know, for bathing and everything like that, you know, it's suitable.
So you are outside of city limits?
No. The wall is right across from St. Pat's.
Okay.
Yeah, he's that string there, right there. They're within limits.
Have you looked at a softener system or a water?
Well, yeah, $1,000, $1,500, you know, and then you have maintenance, so, you know.
It is.
So it'd be constantly maintained, so if I could, just hook up with water, bang, bang, I'm done that, you know, I don't have to worry about nothing.
Sure.
So, any other thoughts from the committee members on that one?
Is there any way to do, like, a payment? Is situation? Or?
Nothing by code, and I didn't mention, but we do have probably a handful of people that are in the same situation every year, and that's been our answer for the past several years. So unless you're part of an annexation agreement or something, it doesn't get waived. So.
Well, not even waiving it, but then you could do a payment.
Yeah.
Type two.
No, nothing in the code. Okay. It just basically says upon connection, you know, you have to pay the dollar amount.
If it was a development, that'd be something that can be structured. But
sure.
There's, you know, we do that with our fees for developers on those kind of projects. But on an individual basis,
right.
That's not something that I would think we would want to get into is those type of plans. Because then if it doesn't work out, we're leaving the property, we're sitting on it, then it becomes problematic. So, all right. I appreciate your input, Joe.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Okay. Any other comments?
Riverfront? Does anybody want to talk about Riverfront?
Yeah, please. That was going to be mine, so.
Yeah. So everybody's read the email that I sent out last week. We're still waiting on the formal report from the engineering consultants. We've seen limited test results so far, which are, environmental engineering speak, so I, can decipher that there's an issue, but I don't exactly interpret them. But their interpretation, and then verbally that they've relayed to us, is that they do expect it to be a petroleum-based product. We've heard from a couple different informal sources that land, might have been used as like a truck depot decades ago, and so that could be it. We'll see when the actual results come back whether they think that that's the case or not, which is immaterial to the fact that there's dirt out there that needs to be remediated or removed or cleaned up or isolated. But it is material to whether we do additional testing. And so that's something that we're going to consider, knowing full well that it's a park, that there's going to be heavy use down there. And then depending on the actual contamination locations, level, how far into the soil it is, we may make different recommendations. So initially I lean towards, if we're going to be down there doing anything and we're planning on making that the crown jewel of the town and we're going to have pretty massive redevelopment over the next couple decades, hopefully, and I'd rather do it right once, even if it's a little intense now. So, we've had, I think, 10 or so different staff members in on the conversation, and each person kind of comes at it with their own unique viewpoint. So I would expect a fairly comprehensive range of options and opinions from staff on what to do. And even if it's less than $20,000 for the additional testing, to me it's something that's important enough that I would want to throw up to the city council to say, you really need to buy into this, because if we do all this additional testing and it turns up something really bad, you have an obligation then and some liability associated with, ownership of the park. So it's a pretty big issue, one that we're handling and kind of waiting on the test results. So intermediate remediation, we dug up some dirt and piled it up and then kind of cordoned it off after we got the test results back. And so they're in the process of removing that to a special landfill here. It might even happen today. We talked about it yesterday. So there's no, imminent safety issue down there, other than we know that there's potential contamination, and it's something that we get to deal with.
Are we testing other parts of the park other than where the playground is going to go, just to see how widespread it is?
Well, that's what we're going to decide.
That's the
question. Yeah, so there's... the playground is kind of west of Geneva Kayak, and then if you go north and a little bit east of the Yak Shack now, the Yak Shack building, that's where the entrance point that we were going to build, like a little fishing pier, like a canoe launch into the park. So that would require some excavation too. So, one train of thought was like, only test where you're going to excavate, because that's where you're disturbing the soil, to figure out if there's staff issues or contractor issues with being exposed to it. And then obviously you're throwing soil around, so you want to make sure that you're not contaminating other spots. And then there's based on the results and the location, like if they say that it's within the playground, more concentrated on one side, or like the levels are higher on one side and they're lower on the other, like maybe that means that the center of it is, you know, on one side of the park, and maybe we would like go outside of the boundaries, or just not do it at all and just say, let's just deal with what we know is the problem, address it, get a clean bill of health on it, and move forward. So we'll see. But, you know, not great news, but it is what it is. You know, I don't think anybody wants us to go down there and put a playground down there and have health issues with kids, you know, kids from now.
Our current concern is the fact that a playground was slated to go in.
Yep.
That is where the primary issue is, since that's what has been identified. The bigger question, how long do you think it'll be before we have the options presented to us for what the scope of service would be in order to study the rest of the year?
Could be as early as end of this week. Could be as late as like maybe a week and a half from now. Okay. We were supposed to get the test results back, I think, today or yesterday. So we'll have to follow up with the consultant. And then, you know, then it's just a matter of scheduling the meeting with all of us and making sure that we're comfortable with it. So there was kind of an X factor where, you know, my initial train of thought was, the state has been through there and ripped up that entire area. How could they have not found something that was an issue? And it's entirely possible that they did find something and didn't know it, because they only really tested basically on the banks and in the river. And in the river, they did find contamination, but we don't think that it was the same contamination. In the river, they had found, they think it was, I think, like chemical residue from the Dial soap factory, maybe, from like decades ago, or that was their, you know, speculation, and they cleaned it up and got a clean bill of health there. So they're saying that this probably isn't that type of chemical that was found down there. So
you said it's petroleum based. Obviously, it's where the playground is. And did you say the northeast side, northeast to the Yak Shack?
West.
Northwest.
West.
Due west.
Due west.
So due west. So when they redid that, that area was actually a staging for the pumps. If I recall, I've got some photographs from that area during the construction. There were some pumps and then some heavy equipment that they had staged, because there was also another set of pumps on the northeast corner of where the ComEd substation is.
Okay. I don't remember there being pumps there. I do remember that that's generally where the trailer, the office trailer
was. Yeah, I know
that
they staged it because their pumps were closer to the river. So maybe, if it's something that they maybe didn't identify up front, I mean, that's heavy diesel, if I'm correct, on those pumps that are running on a full-time basis to keep that area dry while they were working on it. There might be a correlation, but it's I don't want to speculate, but it is potential that something could have happened that they could have spilled. Hopefully, it's very minimal, but
Did you do any samples more, even more west of the park site?
No, and generally on the west side of the playground, the levels were lower, they said, than on the east side. So they were thinking that basically between the playground and the Yak Shack is probably where, like, you know, the center was. And so when we get the results back and we're able to confirm that, you know, my guess is we would say if we're going to test outside of the boundaries, we would go east rather than west. Maybe we do a couple drill sites to the west, but, you know.
Is there a worst-case scenario that the park just won't be able to go there?
I don't think so. It's other than cost. You know, they've thrown out, I think, like, you can excavate it's like a 20-by-40 area, 10 feet down, and that would probably be $150,000 for, you know, excavation, disposal, and then, you know, refilling it. So, you know, if you were to do the entire, like, park area, you know, maybe from like the gazebo to the Yak Shack, I mean, I could see that being upwards of $1 million. So you may look at that and go, it's just not feasible for what we want to do, so maybe we reconfigure it.
Can the park go back to the spot where the park originally was, where hopefully the soil...
Yeah, anything is possible. And that's why, you know, we need to get our hands around what the issue is, how bad it is, and what the options are. So I don't think it's going to get there. And that was Tim's initial fear, was that we've scrapped the entire park. But
well, I would hope where the park, well,
yeah,
it's a long shot where the park used to be, that the soil's okay.
Right.
But if we do further borings and we find that there are contaminants elsewhere, that's what puts us on the hook for potential liability,
yeah,
knowing that it's there. So this one, we know we have an issue, we have to remediate.
If you excavate.
Right. Now, if we leave it as is,
but
there's no issue. But since we've already touched this site, the playground site, we have
to be remediated.
And it's a cost because...
And you can't just cap it. I thought you can, but
when you start capping, we're on a play area. It's a different...
Yeah. That's the impression I got with his email.
Yeah, it's different when you're talking an active use like that as compared to... If you're going to put a parking lot.
Yeah. It is possible, too, with certain types of contaminants and levels, and they said that based on whatever this is or whatever level it's at, they said it's probably, and especially because it's playground, they said that probably wouldn't be feasible here. So, but that's FS, you know, the FS property, the brownfield, that's exactly what we're planning on doing there, was figuring out where to put the building, the parking lots, so that it's all basically hardscape and everything is kind of contained within that.
TIF recapturable funds?
It is, and that's the other thing too, is although we don't have a TIF pot now, you know, you could sell a bond to fully remediate the park without issue and get it paid off over the next 20 years.
Kind of like I talked about, maybe we should consider the FS property, the city going, worst case scenario, if we have to do this. If it gets to a big scope, we could be doing the whole thing.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see what those reports come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a reason to be vigilant, you know, but I don't think it's like, you know, total the sky is falling with the project. It's just something we get to deal with in construction. So.
And 130 years of history.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else from anybody? Otherwise, we will adjourn at 6:51.